So here we are beginning the first chapter of Bereishis. The first note relating to the division of this parsha is that there is, of course, one of the parshas with the most obvious structure, which is explicit in the text. This is the story of the 7 days of creation, which each one of them has an ending that says, Ve'er v'yvoyke yoyim echad shayin ishlishi revi chamish ishishi shvi. So this is one of the parshas without much doubt about its beginning and endings. There's also a header in the beginning of the next parsha, Ela Tel de Sashemayim Vorets, which is apparently a header to the next parsha. Some try to claim that it's a ending to this parsha. In any case, it very clearly gives us a boundary for between these first two prakim, or first two parshas. Of course, this very famously, this is something which the chapter division seems to have missed, because the chapter division ends after the sixth day, and then Vayichulu, the seventh day, is in chapter 2, the first Trupsukim, and that seems to be incorrect based on the internal division of the text, and also the Parshias here follow the internal division, as do the Storim. I will make a comment. People have used this very often to denigrate the Christian, this accepted division of the text, and claiming that there's some ideology behind it, maybe because of the Christians changing Shabbos to Sunday, so somehow putting the Shabbos in the beginning of the next chapter is supposed to help this. I have no idea how this is conspiracy theory is even supposed to work. I will say that there is a simple technical reason for why it happened that way, and there's also There's also precedent in the Medrash, in the Jewish tradition, for dividing parshas this way. So the simple reason is that there's a question of when you organize a text which has what I just discussed, for example, the word Ela, which is can be sometimes the end of one story or the beginning of the next. There's always these transition phrases. There's very often in Tanakh transition verses which tell you this is the end of that thing and then the next thing happened. And sometimes it's one pasuk, that was the end, and then the next thing happened. So there's a question, do you put these things at the end of the previous chapter or at the beginning of the next chapter? The Langton, or whoever it was that actually caught up to parshas, the chapters, generally tended to put the summary verses at the beginning of the next chapter instead of at the end of the previous chapter, where they might more logically belong. We'd have to check if this is correct, but this is definitely something that happens whenever you try to cut up a text. Again, that doesn't in itself, it doesn't say in the text itself where to cut it up, so you end up with these two choices always. Also, in Medrash and Chazal, we find more often the term Sheshes Mebereshes than the term Shivas Mebereshes. There's both, but I've done a search, and Sheshes Mebereshes is more popular because it's talking about the times of actual creation. The seventh day is not part of Bereshes because it's a day of rest. And there's a famous Medrash that talks about the first Parsha as being Mibereshes v'ad v'yichulu. It could be that it's ad v'ad b'chlal, so it really includes that also. But in any case, it seems to be precedent for putting Shabbos in the next thing. But I think still, of course, the actual structure of the story is 7 days, and that's how we will be reading it today until chapter 2, verse 3. So let's just read it or say how it's to be read. This story, or this parsha, is very obviously a story of a week. So it's a story which divides the things that we see. We look around us in the world and we see how there's different kinds of things. And this text divides these things into seven based on or in the same order and structure as a human work week, which works for 6 days and rests on the seventh day. What the parsha does in an extremely beautiful way, I think it's not appreciated enough how much sense the parsha actually makes. People always get caught up in questions of science and of cosmology about how things actually happen. But first, if you just read what it says, it actually creates a beautiful order out of this. So I would even describe it if someone says, a person wakes up and you open your eyes and you see all kinds of things in the world. There's one big thing, and then understanding it with the Torah's, in some sense, a book of wisdom, before it's a book of mitzvahs and laws and how to live. It's also a book of how things are, at least the Sefer Bereshis especially, and the beginning of Bereshis especially. And it gives you a structure of understanding how the world is. You will notice, and someone probably must have done this work already, but you will notice that the rest of the Torah almost very often uses these structures created in these Shivas Yimei Bereshis for other things. A very famous example is in the Seder Sadibris, where it says that you should not make idols out of anything. These are the literal three parts of the world that the first parasha of Bereshis has, and so on, and so on many other parashas. So this is what it does, and it tells it, you could say that the main point is say that God created the world. I'm not entirely sure that that is correct, because like Ramban and Rambam, other says, that's just one pasuk. God created heaven and earth. Maybe even the first pasuk says this. A lot more than that is giving us the order of creation, which is another way of saying dividing, splitting up the world in the correct logical way. And of course, saying that by telling us like what God created first and what last, there's a big question if the first and second is the more important thing. I think that the organization, even in the literal pshat, is the more important thing. And this is how it organizes the world. So it firstly describes exactly this situation. So after the first pasuk, which seems to be like a header pasuk, in the beginning, God created heaven and earth, or the above and the below, that's just a header. Pasuk doesn't really say anything, and as many mafashim think, it doesn't even talk, the word bereshis in the beginning doesn't mean that's for something, it's a general header for the whole thing. And then it starts off exactly where we started off before. In other words, just like a person, an understanding starts off not seeing everything as one big mush, and then you open your eyes, you start to be able to differentiate things. That's what science is, that's what understanding is. The pasuk describes the creation itself in that way. In the beginning, the earth, which we start off, and we start off with only Oretz because there is no Shemaim yet, as we see even the split between Shemaim and Oretz is something of understanding, something of creation which happened afterwards. First is just one big thing, which is without getting into whatever each of these words is supposed to mean. If you follow the rest of the Pesukim, you might find how all these things are created. But the more important thing is that it's a mess, some kind of mess, and it's dark. Now there is some water, there's some water involved, twice to have water in the first pasuk, tahoim and maim. There's some wind, so like these sort of basic ingredients, later people found here the classical four elements, but maybe there's different list of elements in the simple pshat, but there is some concept of like the elements, but all mixed up, mushed up in one place. And now slowly, we're starting to make things make sense. The first thing, step one, day one, is make light. So God makes light. And it's good that there is light. This kitoiv, which is part of the story the whole time, seems to also have a function in the organizing of things. In other words, it's not good to be all messed up. It's good when each things are what they are. So light is good. It's good that there is light. And then there's a split. So therefore, maybe it's one more step or the same step. There's a split between light and darkness. So now it's not, we don't just have choyshech al panei sahayim. There's a new creation of light. And you might even understand it as a separation of the light that was sort of mixed in. It's just very weird to talk about light mixed into darkness. So it doesn't say that way. But this light becomes revealed, becomes a thing in itself. And then this light also gets a place. There's also getting a name. Now, of course, naming things is itself just another way in which we organize the world in the correct things. We say, this is day, and this is night, this is light, and this is day. And again, God himself called light day. So now, he still didn't say when it will be night and day. That's true. But it did say that light is called day, and darkness is called night. So now we have this mush, which was like dark, and therefore not light or dark, really. Now it's clear. There's light for the day, and night, dark for the night. That's the first day, or that's the first step. Second step, we still in the world where there is light and darkness, but there still isn't any vertical differentiation in the world. Everything is just one mush, ruach elim, al pnei ha-mayim. Now the next thing is we make something between the waters and the waters. So we take this mush of water and we split the water in half. We split the water in half. Now, this splitting is what we will know as Shemaim, right? So Shemaim is not it's only the beginning, because of course if you look up into the sky, you see some like, for example, this blue that you see, but we also know that there's things beyond that. There's water beyond that because we see it rains from that apparently, or maybe other things are considered the water above, but probably the simple meaning is the rain. And beyond that, there's also the stars and things. So there's the heaven, there's the Shemaim is not the stop thing, it's actually the middle thing. So this thing we call Shemaim is the thing which split the water to water to give us verticality at all, to give us that there's water above, water below. Now you'll realize until now there's only water. Why is there only water below? Because there is no earth yet. We started off with everything being water. Now, of course, when we say water, we mean water mixed with land. But in all of these differentiations, the Pusik describes the mush as the sort of like lower part. Just like we said, it was dark and light together, but now we talk about darkness and giving light. The same thing we talk about earth or dry land and water mixed together, but when it's mixed together, it turns into wet instead of dry, right? So we have now division between water and water, which includes really the land, which was mushed into maybe both of these sides. But we don't yet have land. That will happen the third day. But meanwhile, we just have the vertical split. So we have water, and that's called Shemaim, and that's the second day. On the third day, we get to the horizontal split. We gather the water. God gathers the water from under the heaven, right? The water on top don't have this division. The water on top are just one big water. But the water on the bottom have another division of becoming in one place. And then we have dry land left over, Viseroya Busha. And then that is what we call Eretz and Yamim. Eretz is really Yabusha. It's interesting that we still have the word Yabusha. Most of these things, even later, we still have Rikia and we still have Choshech, but these are two names, and as if like the primordial, just the thing, what it was, is just dry land. And this dry land is called Eretz. So it gives us another level of differentiation of understanding. And the oceans are called oceans and Yamim. Okay, now that we have the world set up, the most basic, and this is really where the world splits in the middle of the third day. We have the most basic setup. There's up and down. There's the left and right, or sort of horizontal split. There's basic levels of time. It's not clear if there's really day and night, but there's these darkness and light. Now we can talk about what lives, what happens in the world. So now the next thing is, you'll walk around, you'll notice on the dry land, there are things growing. And there's two kinds of things growing, and there's two important things about them. Number one is that there's grasses. I think grass includes things like cereals, wheat, so things that people eat, as we'll see in the later. And there's trees. Another thing interesting about, especially we see it about the trees, but if you look better, you'll see it about the grass also. So we see it later in a second. We'll see that these things also have the nature of giving birth, of perpetuating themselves through more generations. So the tree has fruit, and which the fruit includes seeds, and that seeds grow and give another tree. So we don't have to talk about some kind of creation happening every time. There's already a nature which lets trees continue. And the same thing really for grass. And that's the third day, the second thing in the third day. Once we have a dry land, we could plant, so to speak, grasses and trees onto it. That is the third day. Now, we still don't have a real structure in the heaven. We just made something grow, so to speak. The most basic, it's not called life here, but the most basic things that grow and have kinds. Another thing I forgot to say, there's limino, there's kinds, right? There are many kinds of trees, many kinds of grasses, and each one of them perpetuates itself in his kind, right? So that's the most important observations, our understanding of nature start with this. There's different kinds of grass, different kinds of trees, and each one of them then seeds the next generation of the same thing, the same kind of thing, not the same individual, but the same kind. Now, we still don't only have light, the concept of light. We don't really have any organization for the light. We don't really have any structure in the heaven. The fourth day is all about creating structure in the heaven. Now, the important thing is that the structure in the heaven also is what creates structure on earth. We count time and seasons and maybe even more signs, but at least these, they're like astrological signs. But first, we talk about the natural signs, which everyone agrees on, by the heavenly bodies. So that's the fourth day. God creates the two great lights, and these separate between day and night. So until now, there's this question, so what does it mean before? But in any case, until now, there isn't a clear, like there's a timekeeper, this is the heavenly clock. Like you look at the clock, you see what time it is, you see the star, the sun. It's not clear that the sun is not the source of light in the story. There was light besides for the sun. But this now the sun can show you when there's light. And we get the sun and the moon at night and the stars, and these have this function of giving us the light and the night and the day, and also to sort of be the signifiers of time and to give us a clear calendar. The first calendar, or the primitive calendar, or the until now, is the heavenly bodies and their motion. Now we're back to the earth and the waters, which we split up in the second day. So first, it's interesting how it's like this, but we talked about plants in the third day. Now we'll talk about living things, and the pasuk calls only these living things. There's an interesting discussion later. Some people, Aristotle called plants living things too, but in the Pesach, and Ramban talks about this here, only animals are called living things. We talk about first, like some kind of more basic kind of animals apparently seen as, or different kinds. Now there's two important things. There are fish or living things in the water, and there are birds on the dry land. And birds are only halfway in the dry land because they also have a fly. So they're flying in the skies. They're connected very much with this creation of space, this Ruach Elohim really, which was expanded into space in wind or air, in which the birds fly on from the land, but in the air. And that's created, and there's some Tanin Magdolim also, like, again, important things say, people saw in the oceans, and birds that fly. And again, similar to what we had in the plants, where they have this ability to reproduce themselves, now we have animals which have even more clear, or more, so we call voluntary, a different kind of reproduction, and this is called a blessing. At this stage, it's called a blessing, and apparently because it's less of a natural deterministic thing, there's something like God is not commanding them, but he's blessing them to reproduce themselves, the living things of the water in the water, and the birds and on the dry ground. Now, on the sixth day, the next thing we have is the animals, or the greater animals, not the birds, but regular animals, what we call mammals maybe, but regular animals that live on the, actually two kinds of animals. There's like the large animals, that this is the basic distinction. We have large animals, like the animals that people live with and eat and so on. Now they're not eating them yet, but in any case, the large animals, and then there's like small animals, like insects. And, or we could also talk about domestic animals and wild animals, that might be behemah and chaya. In any case, there's the creation of these things, so animals, two kinds of animals, and insects, or sort of lower animals that are closer to the earth. That's the big difference. And that's one thing. And now there's the final kind of animal, which is extremely special. It's called Betzalmenu Kudmesana. I think in the literal meaning is that the pasuk itself explains itself, what it means to be like God. What it means to be like God is to be v'yirdu b'dagasayam, to be in control. So the human animal is one that controls all five kinds of living things we discussed before. It's interesting that it doesn't say that he controls plants, because again, plants don't seem to have any volition. They don't do anything. They just grow. But both the fish and the birds and the behemah and the, says v'chol oretz, which might mean the chaya, maybe there's something complicated with that, and the insects, the man controls all of them and also has a male and female. Again, animals and some, also even some plants have male and female, but they're less differentiated than them. We don't so much care about, or there isn't like individual males and females, or don't see it that way, but men have male and female. And again, these have a blessing. Again, there's a blessing for the human to reproduce himself and to have control, which again, and I think blessing is where we explain things, where it's not a creation directly, it's something, and it's not a command directly, because it's not like you must do it in the same order of nature, but it is a natural thing to do. So it's a blessing which exists in the order of nature, that men will reproduce and fill the earth and control it and reign over the other animals. And then we have the final thing, or the final mammoth from Masa Bereishis, which is the giving of the plants as food to the animals. And that is important, because that is part of the reign of man and animals, or a man over animals and animals over plants. But here there's really no reign of men or of animals to eat it. It's only of men and animals over plants. And there's something given. God says he gave the grass to the grass and the trees, the grass and the trees to man to eat, and for the animals and the birds and the insects he gave the grass. And it says yereka, so I think the difference is that the esef is for the man is talking about cereals, wheat that people make bread out and stuff out of, and the animals are getting the green leaves and things like that. So that's just explaining the fact that people and that animals live off eating these things that grow, and that's the end. Everything is great. The world is finished, and then we just have like the seventh day, which is that everything is finished. Hashamayim ve'oretz v'chol tzavam. Tzavam is like their everything in them, right? The things, in other words, the plants and the animals, and in the heavens there is the stars and the sun and the moon, and he finished everything and rested, and therefore there's a new blessing, a third blessing, which is, and a ve'yikadosh, I say, sanctification, or making special. And the seventh day is special because God rested on it from his action, or maybe the word rest is not entirely correct. Here it says the word shabbos, or stopped and finished, completed. That's the complete word, and it doesn't say here explicitly, but it's pretty sure that what this means is, and therefore men act in a similar way, where they rest on Shabbos when everything is done.